WXDX FM, Pittsburgh's rock and alternative, and iHeartRadio station.
Well, well, well. All that prayer paid off. Praise Jeebus. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network says that TJ Watt's pec is torn, but the tendon isn't damaged. Whatever that means, it sounds like semantics. If the tendon's not torn, it strikes me the pec isn't, but that's what Rappaport said. TJ Watt's pec is torn, but the tendon isn't damaged. So the prognosis is out 6 weeks. He'll miss six games. It's going to take 6 weeks of rehab, but no surgery. Now, that's Ian Rappaport saying that. It's not Mike Tomlin. Tomlin said today at his press conference that he was encouraged by what he'd been told about TJ Watt. There's leaks, there's lies, and then there's the facts. So do you believe what Rappaport reports? Rappaport isn't lying, but was he lied to? I don't know. I doubt that Rappaport saw an MRI, but I don't know. I do know Watt's going to be out at least 6 weeks, it seems, no matter what. And so if Watt does return for week eight, I think the Steelers need to be no worse than 3-4. And it would help if they were 4-3. As of right now, if Rappaport's report is correct, Watt would return Sunday, October 30th, when the Steelers play at Philadelphia. If I had to venture a guess, I think Watt will probably be out through the bye week, which is one more week. And then he would return Sunday, November 13th at home against New Orleans. But his pec will dictate. This is the Mark Madden Show. You like it, you love it, you want more of it. 412-333-WXDX is the number to call. So to repeat, Ian Rappaport says 6 weeks of rehab, no surgery. Watt should miss just six games. I hope that's true. I think the Steelers would be happy if he came back, like I said, after the bye week, Sunday, November 13th, against New Orleans. Of course, the questions linger, like, how good is he going to be when he comes back? What is risk to the pec when he does come back? Could he blow it up again or worse? Or I don't know. I just suspect TJ Watt, like his brother JJ, before him, is entering the phase of his career where he's going to be hurt an awful lot. And if I could get a bet down at Bet Rivers on whether he'll ever play 17 games in the season again, I would bet absolutely not. But you take what you can get. He's a great player when he's available, no question. So, again, to repeat, TJ Watt, 6 weeks of rehab, no surgery. If the report proves correct, he will miss six games, and I think that the Steelers need to be, again, no worse than 3-4, and preferably 4-3. And I'll tell you, I think they're going to beat New England. I think it's amazing that New England is favored at Acrisure over the Steelers by 1.5. I saw one half of that game between New England and Miami, and I didn't want to watch the rest. The Patriots are just terrible. They are a disorganized mess. And their quarterback hurt his back, although Mac Jones is expected to play at Acrisure on Sunday. So there's the news on TJ Watt. You tell me what you think. How will the Steelers survive his absence? Like I said, if they get Watt back and they're 4-3, even if he misses the game at Philadelphia and they're 4-4, they'll be okay. I still don't think they make the playoffs. I'm still predicting 7-10, but considering the other possibilities, I can't look at today's news as anything but good for the Steelers. The number to call is 412-333-WXDX. We got Dale Lawley in studio. He is with Steelers.com and with Steelers Nation Radio. We got Stan Saverin at 4:30. We got Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News at 5:16. We're going to talk about the Steelers with all of those guests. Of course, we got Ajax and Liverpool in the Champions League, 0-0 in the third minute at Anfield. So it is one heck of a day here at sea, especially given the news about T.J. Watt, if indeed it's true. And I just can't take that news with anything but a grain of salt. It's probably true. But let's be honest, the T.J. Watt injury reports are all over the place. It's like a head of state on their deathbed. The Prime Minister of Peckville is in grave condition. Oh, wait, he's doing better. Oh, wait, turn for the worse. Oh, wait, he'll be back in 6 weeks. Oh, wait, he's dead. Let's get a second opinion. Yep, he's definitely dead. Get out the Bible and swear in Malik Reed. It's like Generalissimo Francisco Franco, which is one heck of a dated reference. Look at the reports leading up to this. Schefter said one thing. Florio said another. Rappaport said this. I can't believe that medical science hasn't somehow figured out a way to have a pec transplant, which would get T.J. Watt back in the lineup much sooner. The scientific community has let America down in that regard. They spend too much time on all them damn vaccines and puberty blockers. I heard Watt hired a doctor to give him a second opinion, and the doctor said, okay, your offensive line stinks. If you believe in T.J. Watt's value, then these next six games, assuming that's what he misses, they're not going to go too good. Last year, the Steelers went 9-4 when Watt played the whole game. That includes playoffs, that debacle, that drubbing at the hands of Kansas City. And the Steelers went 0-4-1 when Watt didn't play the whole game, when he wasn't available, period, which was two games, and then three other games where his play was compromised by injury mid-game. Last year, we said it was so important, a reflection of Watt's value, but now Watt's hurt and it's no big deal. That really is kind of contradictory, isn't it? I'm not surprised that that's what the diagnosis is, considering Watt was shopping for second opinions, because if you look long enough for the second opinion you want, you will get it. One report said a test on Watt's pec was inconclusive. How could that be? It's not that complicated. It's torn or it's not. But then suddenly, the Rappaport report said it's torn, but kind of. It's torn, but it's okay. It's torn, but it's all right. Again, I don't trust any of this. The Steelers are hoping Watt. We're all hoping Watt misses six games. When Tomlin talked today about Watt, he said he was encouraged, but wouldn't rule out surgery. I don't know. I mean, you're all going to take this report from Rappaport as gospel. I think it's probably correct, but that's as far as I'll go, that it's probably correct. If you want to talk about that game last night where Denver screwed the pooch against Seattle, I can see why the Steelers hold on to Mike Tomlin forever, because you might end up with that idiot, somebody like coach in Denver that took the ball out of his quarterback's hands, the guy they just paid, what, 260 whatever friggin' million to, and they tried a 64-yard field goal. That was just unbelievable. How about Baker Mayfield lost to Cleveland, Russell Wilson lost to Seattle? Won't you tell me, where have all the good times gone? Now, we shouldn't forget that Watt's going to miss at least the six games. How do you make up for Watt's absence? And can they? What do you think? At the end of yesterday's show, I came up with one guy I think can kind of do the trick a little bit. I mean, nobody can replace Watt, but you'll hear that in just a minute. But I repeat again, the Steelers are going to beat New England. There's no question about that. I can't believe New England is somehow favored by a point and a half at Acrisure. I can't believe that. New England was just a mess against Miami. Just a mess. The Steelers plus 1.5 at home, even without Watt, it's a safe bet. New England disorganized, so few weapons. Steelers are going to win outright. Go to 2-0. You heard it here. 412-333-WXDX. We got Dale Lawley at the bottom of the hour. It's the Mark Madden Show, 105.9.
And now, the super genius, Mark Madden.
Hey, Mark, great show as always.
When you got a young trophy wife, owes money to... I can't even quote the Big Lebowski right. Goodbye.
PX at 105.9.
It's time now for the Buck O'Run-up. The Pirates won 6-4 at Cincinnati last night. They're winning 5-1 at Cincinnati today in the top of the ninth. The Pirates play again tonight at Cincinnati. Game two of a day-night doubleheader. So the Buccos are red hot. But really, who cares? That's the Buck O'Run-up for today. The big news is that T.J. Watt could be back as soon as 6 weeks from now, missed just six games. The pec is torn, but the tendon isn't. I don't get that diagnosis, but hey, the bottom line is all that prayer paid off. It goes to show you that God will answer your prayers if they're not too demanding. A football injury, a torn pec, he could take care of that. A lost limb, an organ transplant, life support, bubonic plague, malaria, syphilis. That's a little tough. That's a little more difficult for God to deal with. That's a big ask. But, you know, a 27-year-old millionaire who would have got paid $24 million this year no matter what, guy in the prime of his life has everything, God can take care of him. The homeless, the dying, screw them. Make sure that T.J. Watt's pec injury isn't too bad. And we will call it even. Sacrifice a live chicken. Get out a Ouija board. I mean, look at Sunday. Look at this past Sunday. I prayed for Joe Burrow to get hurt. He did not. But Cincinnati's long snapper did. And that gave the Steelers the win. And as if on cue, Mo Salah, Mo Salah, running down the wing. Salah, the Egyptian king. 1-0 Liverpool over Ajax at Anfield. Much needed to get that first goal. Okay, we're talking about what they can do in the absence of T.J. Watt to make it work. And I repeat, you can't replace T.J. Watt. He's the best defensive player in football. No one guy can do it. Honestly, no group of guys can do it. But Devin Bush played pretty good on Sunday. And I know he's an inside backer. Watt's an edge rusher. But if Devin Bush can be the playmaker he was drafted to be when they traded up to get him with the 10th pick overall in 2019... even be, you know, 75% of what they expected, that can help a lot. And Bush showed some signs of that at Cincinnati. You can't replace Watt, but there's some possibilities with the Steelers that can get them through the games that Watt misses. I might sign Jason Pierre-Paul to be the number three edge rusher, but I hear no talk of that. So it's going to be Highsmith and Reed. Maybe Jameer Jones figures in some. Malik Reed said he will not try to be T.J. Watt. I think he should try. What do you got to lose? Set the bar high. When Mario came back in 2001, his center was Jan Herdina. Herdina between Jager and Mario. Mario played wing. And Yanni got his bell rung. He got his head bapped. And he was on the ice and the physio came out and said he doesn't know who he is. And Jager said, well, tell him he's Mario. Sound advice. And Ajax just hit the crossbar. Offsides. Cheating Dutchman. But let's see Bush, you know, keep his level of play up. Miles Jack played good. Let's see them keep doing it in the middle. Bush played hard, tough. He got stuck in the blocks. Ain't seen that in a long time. Ever since he hurt that knee, he had been like a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox. Hopefully Sunday is a sign of things to come. And again, the Steelers will beat New England. I guarantee it. I absolutely friggin' guarantee it. I'm just glad the prayer paid off. The prayer for the millionaire. Got to make sure these millionaires have everything. The next time something bad happens to a millionaire, pray for him too. It's the right thing to do. This is actually kind of funny. I said in my article at the Trib that Alex Highsmith had that great game Sunday, 3 sacks, a career high, and I said he wouldn't have as much space with T.J. Watt out. And his dad, Sam Highsmith, is on Twitter coming at me like, just you wait and see. If I'm Alex Highsmith, I'm like, yo, dad, shut the frig up. Not in front of the guys, all right? I can't imagine a professional athlete would want his daddy to defend him on Twitter. I mean, I know the guy means well, and Alex Highsmith did play good, and I said he played good, but it will be tougher for him when Watt's not in there. Okay, Dale Lawley joins me in just a few moments here in studio. We'll see if he can help Liverpool hold the lead against Ajax. If you're just tuning in, oh, wait, free kick in a promising position. We'll give you the results when it comes back, but if you're just tuning in, Rappaport says Watt's out 6 weeks, no surgery, rehab required. Which means he would miss 6 games. I'm looking at the schedule right now. They beat New England. I got to be honest, they lose at Cleveland. Cleveland's real good even with Brissett. They beat the Jets. That's 3-1. They lose at Buffalo. They lose to Tampa Bay at Acrisure. That's 3-3. Then there's at Miami. I think they probably lose that. But the swing games, I think, are Cleveland and Miami. I think the other results are non-negotiable. Cleveland and Miami will tell the tale. 105.9.
And now, the super genius, Mark Madden.
I'm one of a kind on the radio.
Thank you for being the best damn radio host in Pittsburgh.
It's a family affair.
The X at 105.9.
Double M on the X, joining me now in studio, responsible for Ajax tying the game 1-1 from Steelers.com and Steelers Nation Radio. It's Dale Lawley. Dale, we heard the TJ Watt news. Obviously, this is not from a Steelers source. It's from Ian Rappaport, but he is a good reporter with good sources. Do you put 100% credence into the six-week thing?
You know, I never put, and I've learned this from Mike Tomlin. You know, I can remember talking to him about when Terrell Suggs tore his Achilles tendon. This is about, you know, 7 or 8 years ago in the spring. And you'd think with a torn Achilles tendon, there's no way he comes back and plays that year. And Tomlin says you never put it past ridiculous athletes to come back and play before you think they're going to come back and play. And I thought it was nuts that the Ravens didn't put him on IR that year. And then he comes back and plays at midseason. So, you know, they heal differently than other people.
And but there's degrees weeks, of the injury,
yeah,
too.
But 6 weeks sounds like, you know, that sounds realistic.
Could you see a scenario? Because, again, I'm just spitballing here. If he misses one more game, then he comes back after the bye week. I would think if there's any doubt that probably is to miss one more game might be a good idea.
You know, it just depends on where
he's
at.
If he's ready, he's ready.
Yeah, if he's ready, they're going to play him. You know, if he's, you know, as Tomlin said today, I'd rather say woe than sick him. You know, so they're not going to hold him back. You know, if he's ready to go, he's ready to go. If they don't think that there's a chance of aggravating that injury or extending it past, you know, what it is now, they'll bring him back and let him play. You know, but, you know, you look at that schedule early. You know, getting that win in Cincinnati on Sunday was huge. I think a lot of people were already in the loss column.
I was.
And, you know, you go out there and you steal that one the same way you did against Buffalo last year in the opener. And now you start looking at the schedule going, okay, you know, they might be in pretty good shape here.
Yeah, because I think I'm jumping ahead here a bit, but I think they're going to beat New England. I watched the first half of that New England-Miami game.
Oh, they're atrocious.
I couldn't watch anymore. They were horrific.
Yeah.
I can't believe New England's a 1.5-point favorite at Pittsburgh.
It's really hard to believe. And did nobody watch what happened in New England in the preseason as well? This was a continuation of the issues that they had had throughout the preseason, and it showed up. I mean, they scored 7 points on Sunday, and I don't know how they got the 7. Watching that game, they did not play well. You look at them from the skill position standpoint, and who are you afraid of on that offense? I mean, it's pretty nondescript.
They have no weapons.
No weapons.
Their defense is okay.
The defense is good, and you would expect that from a Belichick team, but they don't have great weapons. And who the hell's their offensive coordinator? You know, they don't even know. It's changing, you know. I don't know.
That's one of the weirdest situations where you have two defensive coaches splitting the offensive coordinator duties, and Belichick, who was also a defensive guy, is sticking his thumb in.
Yeah, I just don't know that that's a healthy thing for the young quarterback. I mean, let's not forget Mac Jones is in his second year. There were times in the preseason, where Patricia, who's supposed to be the offensive line coach, is over-talking with the rest of the offense because he's calling the plays. And, you know, all their offensive linemen are in a group gathered around their center, Andrews, trying to figure out what they're supposed to do. It's just not a great idea. I don't either Belichick's playing at a different level than everybody else, and we're all going to say, oh, that was just a great idea, or this is just plain, you know, crazy.
Having watched that first half Sunday, I know which way I'm betting. Now, how can they cover up for Watt's absence? Because, you know, obviously Malik Reed's not going to replace him. That said, I think Malik Reed can do okay.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy who started 26 games the last two seasons for the Broncos and had 13 sacks in those 26 games. So, you know, he's a competent Robin to Batman. He was playing opposite Von Miller a lot of those games, and that helps. Now their question for them is, and I heard you talking about this, you know, Alex Highsmith had a great first game. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But he's Robin. Can he now step into that Batman role a little bit here?
And it's way different.
It absolutely is.
The attention paid. The tight end's going to lean that way more often now. It's just different.
Yeah. Now, he does have the advantage of having Cam Hayward next to him on that side of the formation, which, you know, helps as well. Does Hayward now start to see that double team action? There were times I couldn't believe the Bengals on Sunday left Hayward one-on-one with their rookie Volson. That's just not a good idea. And Hayward just walked him back to the quarterback. So does he get more attention now? Does Highsmith get more attention now? Guys still have to win their one-on-ones.
This is more indirect, but what about Devin Bush? I thought he had a good game at Cincinnati. I mean, he wasn't superstar level, but that's the best he's played in a while, probably since the ACL tear. If he can become some percentage of the playmaker they hope for when they traded up to get him with that 10th pick in 2019, how far does that go?
I think it goes a long way. I mean, because I think Miles Jack is very solid next to him. If those two inside linebackers are active and making plays, that's the one thing. I talked to Devin about that a couple of weeks ago. He feels like he's back 100%. But even he understands that, you know, even that in his second year, in those first five games that he played, he said, look, I wasn't making the splash plays then, but I felt like I was where I needed to be all the time. And I was, you know, covering my assignments. The splash plays you would hope would come by doing that. If he can, you know, come up with a couple of interceptions, maybe a fumble forced or recovered. I mean, those are the things that you need without T.J. Watt in there. I mean, you saw the play that he made on the interception, going up and getting it. Those are the plays that, you know, there are only so many guys on the planet to make those kind of things. And that's why you pay T.J. Watt the way you pay him. So other guys are going to have to do those kind of things, and they've got some people who are capable. We've seen Devin Bush do it in the past. You'd like to see those splash plays moving forward.
Now, Minka had just a phenomenal game at Cincinnati. The only thing that disturbed me was, you know, he made great plays at both ends, the pick six and the blocked extra point, although he could have fair caught the long snap. I mean, that was just, I mean, you know, hey, you need breaks to win, no complaints. But he also had to make 14 tackles. So did he have the freedom that he had, you know, his first couple of years here and that he hoped to have again, or was he just reduced to being a tackling machine again?
No, they were moving him all over the formation. He was in the slot. He was in the middle of the field. He was deep safety. So that was the plan going in. That's what they wanted to do throughout the preseason. That's why, you know, I was interested to see how they would make that work when DeMonte KZ went out in the preseason game. And they were putting Trey Norwood back at free safety, moving guys around and allowing Minka Fitzpatrick to get up closer to the line of scrimmage. They want him in the middle of the action where he can make some of those plays like that.
Now, I want to talk offense. What was your general take? Because I thought the game plan was a bit conservative. I do like that they went to Freiermuth in the middle some, but I didn't understand the lack of Pickens' involvement.
Yeah, they didn't throw the ball outside a whole lot, and when they did, it was largely Deontay Johnson. So they were pretty conservative in that, and they did lose the turnover battle last year against the Bengals 5-1, and I think they were very cognizant of that, and maybe
too much,
maybe
so.
Too much so. But they also had a 17-3 lead midway through the second quarter. And so, you know, that allowed them to get a little more conservative. I'd like to see them open things up a little bit more. I thought that they would throw the ball down the field, especially to your point, down the seam to Claypool, down the seam to Freiermuth, to kind of loosen up things for that running game. And I think we're going to see more of that as we move on here. But I just think on the road, the way that offensive line had played in Jacksonville, which was the only other time they were on the road this year, they were very cognizant of, hey, we don't want a bunch of holding penalties. We don't want false starts in this loud environment. Let's get the ball out quickly here. And they did that and avoided the turnovers. You know, I think you might see a little bit different tactic this week against New England, allow him to go down the field a little bit more, maybe open things up.
We're talking to Dale Lawley of Steelers Nation Radio and Steelers.com here on 105.9 The X. The offensive line obviously didn't run block well. How was its pass protect? They only allowed the one sacks, but I still felt like Trubisky was crowded a bit.
I didn't think it was that bad. I thought they did a pretty solid job. Now, that being said, they didn't, again, throw the ball down the field a whole lot. But I thought overall, I mean, Trey Hendrickson's a really good football player, as is Hubbard yes. on the other side. And, you know, they did a nice job. I thought
they got big guys in the middle, too. I mean, that was no easy task for the O-line, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's probably the second-best defensive front in the AFC North, and they held up well in that environment. Again, it was loud there. And, you know, so I didn't have a problem with how the pass protection was. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, they didn't – the pass rushers for the Bengals really didn't affect the game. I think Dan Moore had one holding call on Hendrickson. But other than that, it was a pretty clean game for those guys. And so if you can do that week in and week out, you know, you'll find the running game. The running game is going to happen there as they get more into this and get a better feel for it. They were able to run the ball non-traditionally, 6 carries out of Claypool.
Right. You know, so much so it was almost predictable after a while.
To a large degree. But I thought, you know, when they did that, I thought Claypool did a pretty nice job of getting yardage on that and making some tough runs.
Yeah, there were some things I didn't like with the – like I said, I thought the game plan was in general too conservative. Whenever Boykin and Gunner were out there, you knew they were going to run.
Yeah.
Except they
yeah.
threw the ball long once to Boykin to try to keep him honest. But you know, I thought Trubisky played okay. For a first game with a new team and a new game plan, I thought he played okay.
I thought his accuracy was a little lacking. Maybe that was some jitters there. But, you know, first time he'd started a game in a couple of years. You know, I'd like to – you know, it's interesting. They came out right away and ran no huddle on their first series. And I thought, okay, allow him to get into a little bit of a rhythm here, because he had shown he could do that in training camp, did it well in the preseason as well. And then they never went back to it again until late in the game. And again, he goes out and makes some plays in that. Wouldn't mind seeing that this week again, early in the game, to allow him to maybe get into a bit of a rhythm.
It was like a Ben game last year, wasn't it? He didn't play great till he,
and even till at the he end, needed to, yeah.
He was only 3 out of 7 at the end. You know, for 49 yards, I think, but it won the game.
Yeah, make the play when you need to make a play. And I thought the you know, having the wherewithal with him and Freiermuth on that 26-yard pass where they knew the Bengals were offsides. And you know what? Just take – he had a back in front of him in the flat where he could have taken the dump off and maybe gotten, you know, 8 yards in that situation. And he said, you know what? I'm going to chuck this up and let Freiermuth make a play. And Freiermuth came back across the formation and back across the field and did it. And you know, that was a big play and a big moment, and it was very Ben-like, in fact.
Now, just to get back to the defense for a second, the D got the 5 takeaways, got 7 sacks, I think, Highsmith with 3. But they also allowed 32 first downs and 432 yards, made some stops at the end by the skin of their teeth. Now, I don't attribute that to anything but them being on the field too much. 44 minutes.
It was almost 100 plays.
Well, right. And what, Minka and Edmonds played all of them, right?
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you know, it's weird because they were asked to do too much and they did real well, but I think that's going to be a recurring theme, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, you have to give the other guys credit too. And Cincinnati going into that game, everybody was wondering, you know, you look at that Bengals offense and you got Chase and you got Higgins. Now, they didn't have Higgins for most of the second or for the second half. But Mixon's a top 5 running back in the league as well. And then Boyd's a good guy out of the slot. And Burrow is Burrow. That's one of the top 3 or 4 skill position groups that you're going to see in the NFL. And they're going to get theirs in those situations. I thought that's why, you know, the Steelers playing, they were jumping routes left and right in those situations. And that's why they got the interceptions they did. You know, when you play an offense like that, they're going to get theirs. That's just the reality of it. But I thought that they did a nice job taking the football away, putting the Bengals in some situations, but you can't ask your defense to be out there like that. You just can't. I mean, it's insane.
Especially, I thought the defense played physical, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought, especially in the middle, like even Bush, who's not a physical guy necessarily, did the job in that regard, I thought. And Miles Jack can hit.
Yeah.
That's he lights people up.
It's funny. I talked to Hayward last week about, you know, what, you know, I said, hey, what's your definition of a dominant defense? And he mentioned the takeaways and everything like that. And he said, and I want teams, when they get done playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, to feel like, man, those guys were tough, and they beat the hell out of us. And I guarantee you that's the way the Bengals felt about it. I mean, they played the Steelers' defense played almost 100 snaps. So did the Bengals' offense, and I guarantee those guys were pretty whipped as well.
Now let's look at the schedule real quick before we wrap up, Dale. I think they beat New England. How about you?
I do as well. I'm surprised New England's favored.
I think the game of Cleveland's a toss-up, even with Brissett. I think they showed with that win over Carolina they're a good football team regardless of who the quarterback is.
Yeah, and some of that may be Carolina as well. You know, Baker Mayfield might have been a little too geeked up for that game, but
I think he probably was, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good matchup on the road. It's a familiar opponent. It's a Thursday night. So the short week, I think, favors Cleveland for sure. Steelers will take their chances in that one.
I think they beat the Jets.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody is going to beat the Jets. At Buffalo,
not winning that one, yeah.
I mean, how good did Buffalo look Thursday? It's unbelievable, right? Yeah. Like, they overwhelmed the Super Bowl champions.
I'll be honest. That to me, watching that game last Thursday, was the reason why I picked the Steelers to win on Sunday, because the Bengals didn't play their offensive line. They didn't play anybody. Yeah. All preseason, you had four new offensive linemen there, and I watched that game with the Rams, and I'm like, this is what happens when a good defensive front faces a bunch of guys who haven't played. It looked bad.
Then they're at home against Tampa Bay. Tampa's going to be favored. They're a pretty good team. I'd like to say that swing game, but I would pick Tampa.
Tampa's going to be favored in that game. There's no doubt about that.
What about the next one, hopefully, is the last one without TJ, at Miami. What do we think of them? I think that's a swing game.
That's a swing game. They played well on Sunday as well, and they're one of those teams that are going to be in the mix. I'm still not a Tua believer. I think, you know.
Yeah, but I might be a Tyreek believer.
Well, Tyreek's good, and so is Waddle, and but are they going to be able to run the football? Is their offensive line any good? I don't know if they are. I think that game's definitely a toss-up. And, you know, you win that one, now you get the tiebreaker over the Dolphins. That's going to be a huge one at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, you're right, though. The Cincinnati win's like free money.
Yeah.
I mean, because I wrote that one off. But, yeah, I mean, imagine if they got through the first four games 4-0, which I'm not dismissing. You know what I mean? I wouldn't bet on it, but I'm not dismissing that. How about you?
No, I'm not dismissing it either. I think they're certainly all winnable when you look at them, and especially if the defense plays like it did on Sunday. I mean, they can beat just about any team in the league if they play like that.
That's Dale Lally. I'm Mark Madden. 1-1 as we near halftime, 105.9.
And now, the super genius, Mark Madden.
Hey, Mark, great show as always.
When you got a young trophy wife, owes money to... I can't even quote the Big Lebowski right. Goodbye.
The X at 105.9.
TJ Watt looks likely to miss six games, according to Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network. Here's how I look at those games. You heard me going down the schedule with Dale Lally a couple minutes ago. I think they beat New England. I think Cleveland's a swing game, but I think they probably lose. I think they beat the New York Jets. I think they get killed at Buffalo. I think they lose it to Tampa Bay at Acrisure. I think they lose at Miami, but that could go either way too. So that would make them 3-4 when Watt comes back, if indeed he does come back for the eighth game, which is at Philadelphia, which is going to be a very tough game too. The stretch they have from Buffalo through Tampa Bay, at Miami, at Philadelphia, then New Orleans and Cincinnati, then at Indianapolis. All seven of those teams are projected by Peter King to either make the playoffs or lose on a tiebreaker. So where do you think the Steelers will be when TJ Watt gets back? And how much faith do you put in Rappaport's report? 6 weeks, no surgery, pec torn, but the tendon's okay. That's being very specific, which makes me actually have more faith in the diagnosis. But then again, the pec torn, but the tendon okay. I've not heard that diagnosis before. I'd be lying if I told you there's not some part of me that hears that is double talk. How much faith do you have in the Steeler defense to still be great in Watt's absence? Not good, but great. They need it to be great. With that offense the way it is, especially as unimaginative as the game plan was with Matt Canada on Sunday, the lack of risk being taken, the defense has to be great. I mean, think about it. And I know that Cincinnati's a good team. I know, like Dale said, winning at Cincinnati is like found money. You didn't expect to do it. But they won the takeaway battle 5-0. They got 7 sacks, but they still only won by the grace of that fluky missed extra point at the end of regulation by Cincinnati because the long snapper's hurt. And the defense had to be on the field 44 minutes and gave up a lot of yards and a lot of first downs, but not many points because they played gutsy and they played timely. Do you have the faith that the offense will get better? Because it needs to. Do you have the faith that the defense can maintain, I don't know, 80% of that performance? Because it's going to need to. And keep in mind, 80% of that performance against New England, for example, and their no-name, nondescript offense with a second-year quarterback who has a bad back, 80% of that performance against Cincinnati will be more than enough to win the game. I can't believe New England's favored by 1.5 at Acrisure. I've been looking for something I'm missing, and I just can't see it. Why is New England favored? 412-333-WXDX. How much faith do you have in Malik Reed to deputize for TJ Watt? How much faith do you have in Alex Highsmith? Like Lolly said, he's going to be Batman now. He was Robin, and TJ Watt was Batman, but now Highsmith's going to be Batman. Do you have faith in him? A lot going on, a lot to unpack. The TJ Watt news gives some hope, but it's still going to be a tough next 6 weeks. At least the prayer for TJ Watt worked. My faith in God has been vindicated because he saved the peck, the season of the millionaire athlete who was going to make $24 million this year, no matter whether he played another snap or not. That is God in action, my friends. That is religion at its finest. That is faith being rewarded for all of you. For all of you, and not necessarily TJ Watt, because I would like to think he's smart enough to know that football's not something worth praying for. But hey, who knows? He's kind of a meathead. 412-333-WXDX. Just around the corner, we're going to talk about some of the craziness that's been going on in the NFL in its salad days of the 2022 season. Week one was just mondo nutso. Look at some of the stuff we saw last night in that Seattle-Denver game. I give Seattle credit, though. Playing against Russell Wilson, they battled their backsides off and, you know, probably should have lost the game. Denver made a lot of mistakes, some blatant coaching errors. But Seattle battled, and Geno Smith played one of his better games as a pro, which is setting the bar awfully low. But he done okay. He really did. I saw where people were giving the Seattle fans a hard time because they gave Russell Wilson a hard time. They booed Russell Wilson on his return to Seattle. I don't think they should have. I think it is kind of low class because Russell Wilson won them a Super Bowl and is arguably the greatest player in the history of the franchise. But fans going to do what fans going to do. Fans going to fan. And people in Pittsburgh have no right because you've booed Ben. You cheered when Terry Bradshaw got hurt way back when. And I know that's a different generation, but it definitely happened. 412-333-WXDX. We'll be talking about what went on week one, some crazy things. And what will the Steelers do during their time without TJ Watt? What do you think? 412-333-WXDX.